And joining us on Perspectives Book Club today is New York Times bestselling author Sandra Brown. Sandra is the author of 68 New York Times bestsellers. She has more than 80 million copies of her books in print worldwide, and her work has been translated into 34 languages. And the neat thing about Sandra is that she lives in Texas, and she is a former journalist, worked at a TV station, and you can find out more information about her by going to sandrabrown.net. We're going to talk about her latest novel, but first, Sandra, thank you so much for being with us here again.
Well, thank you, Louie. Always appreciate the invitation.
Thank you. And your new book is called Sting, and I want to say that all your books are unique. But this one has a lot of twists and turns, and I think the people, when they read it, they're going to say, wow, I didn't expect that to happen, as that's what happened with me. And just kind of to set it up for people, it's one of the main characters is Jordy Bennett, and Shaw Kennard is a man who spots Jordy at a what some people might call a seedy bar. And Jordy is a beautiful woman, at least the way that you describe her in the book. And she is in a place that
she shouldn't be.
Right. And Shaw Kennard, who is there along with a hitman, and they lock eyes, and all of a sudden,
Well, let me tell you how that came about. I was working on another project. It was a nonfiction article for a magazine or something. And all of a sudden, I was thrust into this scene that you've just described. I knew I was in this backwater bar in Louisiana. I saw Shaw sitting there at the bar. I saw next to him Mickey. I knew their names immediately, and I was overhearing their conversation about this woman who had just walked in. And it was so vivid. I thought, who are these people? What relationship do they have with one another, or is there one? Why are they all here in this place and time? And why did her appearance there upset the apple cart? And I didn't even know what the apple cart was. But I just turned to my keyboard and started typing. And before I knew it, I had a prologue in chapter one. And I knew nothing else. When Shaw does that startling thing and leaves with Jordy, not in the way that we thought was going to happen, I was like, whoa, what just went down? So I thought, if I'm that curious to find out, and if I'm intrigued, then the reader's going to be intrigued. And I kind of took a deep breath and stepped back and started reviewing the situation and thought, what story can I put behind this? Another 450 pages. So that's where I came up with the story, with the idea. I have to confess, most of the twists were surprises to me. They shocked the heck out of me. I would be riding along, and I would realize that three chapters ago, a character had told me something that was a total lie. And I would be like, oh my gosh, I fell for it. And I thought, well, if I fall for it, the reader's going to fall for it. So every character in this book has an agenda. Every character is trying to sting someone else, and every character eventually gets stung. And I was the first victim. I was the first person it happened to, because I had built in a couple of what I knew would be plot twists, but then most of them were surprises to me, too. And that's when it was really fun to write, and I think it's going to be really fun when a reader reads it, because if I'm not having a good time, the reader's not going to. And hopefully, if I am having a good time, the reader will.
We are visiting with New York Times bestselling author Sandra Brown. Sandra is the author of the recent novel, Sting. One of the things that you just mentioned, Sandra, and I think our listeners and readers might wonder, well, how does that happen? Because I thought writers, authors already knew what they were going to write. They had a plot. But I guess it's kind of like when we're in high school and they tell us to write a paper and we kind of don't know what to write and we're coming up with these different ideas. But when you mentioned about the twists and the turns and the fact that you kind of saw these characters when you were in Louisiana, the listeners want to know, well, Sandra, do these people seem real to you and do they talk to you?
Absolutely. I never feel as though I create the characters. I feel as though they have been in my subconscious forever. And on any given time, they decide to reveal themselves to me. Because as I say, when I was in this kind of trance and I was envisioning this bar and I see this guy, it was like, well, that's Shaw Kennard. He was just so real in an instant. So I always feel like the characters are there, the story is there. It's up to me to excavate it. It's up to me to kind of draw it out, because I always feel like it was there in the back of my mind all along. So I live with these people, and sometimes we go through a getting acquainted period. Like I knew there was that one sentence in the prologue that said Shaw had that way about him, and it was repelling the looks of would-be men, bullies, and speculative looks from women, but nobody went near him. And I thought that sentence encapsulated his character. He had that way about him. And that's really all I knew at that point, and that he was hired to kill this woman. So over the course of the first draft, got to know him a lot better, got to know Jordy, got to know why she felt so guilty and so protective of her brother. All of the characters, when they're first introduced, I'm getting to know them. I didn't know Joe Wiley until he walked into his kitchen to eat and got a phone call from his partner. Didn't know his partner until he called him on the phone. So it's like they emerge, not like I put them there. Does that make sense? I know it sounds like I'm crazy, but I play make-believe.
And you play make-believe, but they're very believable, these stories, because it's not like you're going, oh, come on, that can't happen, because it can happen and it has happened. People who have read about true crime stories in the past, and people have always been fascinated by detective stories, crime, thriller, all that stuff.
Drama. They make for drama.
Yes.
And, yeah. So I think if we listen to the news or read the newspaper or whatever, we know that absolutely anything is possible and that people will do anything. And just when you think you cannot be surprised, there's another headline that takes your breath. You say, how is that possible? And if there's anything that we should have learned, it's that anything can happen because people will do anything. So I try not to let credulity stop the creativity, because some of the best stories, both fiction and non, have been totally outlandish. The sinking of the Titanic. It's maiden voyage, all the rich people in the world on it. And and you're like, how could that possibly happen? A great white shark terrorizes this Long Island village. We believed it because it was written correctly. So a reader goes into a book wanting to believe it, and they're willing to suspend disbelief. But as you say, anything can happen these days, unfortunately, to some extent.
And I'm not sure what other readers do, but I tend to pick up a book and I'll read the first couple of paragraphs. And if that captures me, that really goes a long way. And I think it was, oh my gosh, I just forgot the author's name, but he mentioned that the first sentence is one of the most important things in a book. And your first sentence in your book, in the prologue, is exactly 22 minutes before Mickey Bolton met his maker, he tossed a handful of popcorn into his mouth and said, "A woman walks into a bar." That's incredible. I mean, this is like, wow. You know, just a few minutes to live, and there he's eating popcorn.
And he doesn't know it.
Right.
Well, thank you. I've worked a long time on that first sentence.
Well, it's an awesome sentence. Thank you for sharing that. And I've been wanting to ask you about another book of yours, because the title can be a little bit misleading sometimes. But when I read and heard the audiobook, I was fascinated. Again, a lot of surprises and twists, and that's Rainwater.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. That's a completely different kind of book.
Yes.
But Rainwater was probably the book closest to any kind of life experience, and it wasn't my life experience, it was my dad's. And he had told the story about his father, my grandpa, during the Depression, 1934, Central Texas. He had a dairy farm. And because he was ordered by federal agents to pour out milk that he could not sell rather than give it away to people in Shantytown whose babies were starving, he refused to do it. So they kept saying, you know, they were trying to create, the theory was, federal government imposed where they would create a false demand for commodities like milk. And my grandpa just refused to throw away good milk when there were people he could see starving. And they had an armed standoff, my relatives.
Wow.
And federal agents. And Daddy was 6 years old. But, of course, this was very scary. It lasted for several days. And I don't believe any shots were ever fired. I don't believe anyone was ever hurt. But they withdrew, and Grandpa went on giving away his milk. So Daddy was a writer. He was an editorial writer, and he wrote about this. And I was probably in high school, and I said, I never knew this. This is just, and of course, my imagination started going wild. And then, as I was saying earlier, these characters sometimes just emerge, and they say, we're interesting, write about me, tell our story. And one such was Rainwater and Ella. And I kind of combined the two things, and that's how Rainwater came about.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And unfortunately, Sandra, we were told by your producer, that publicist, that you have to leave. So, but we thank you that we had at least a little bit of time to share, and so our listeners could hear. We've been visiting with New York Times bestselling author Sandra Brown. Sandra's latest novel is Sting. Sandra, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much, Lee. Always enjoy our talk.
Thank you. Have a great day. God bless.